Can you explain why Bitcoin is such an attractive financial tool?
Because it is somewhat anonymous, not fully, and because you can move money instantaneously.
So the one thing we can count on is discovery. Bitcoin goes forward in the year 2024.
In the middle words of the Doors,
12, 11, 10,
the time to hesitate
9,
is through.
Ignition sequence start.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
All engine running.
Hey, Fee, how's it going?
Good, DJ, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I was just telling you off air, I think we first met in Murrah, although I wouldn't have ID'd myself at all, and the podcast didn't exist. This would have been a couple of years ago. And I came away from that experience, and I think it was one of the first times I'd ever met that amount of Bitcoiners in real life, which has some sort of transformative effect on you. But I remember having a conversation with you and your partner, and it just struck me, like, just how Bitcoin has come from all walks of life. Anyway, long story short, I've wanted to get you on the podcast for quite a while, and I'm really pleased and stoked to actually have you on the podcast finally. I know that it's not something you're technically used to or anything like that, but just know that from me, you've been on my hit list for quite some time. So, yeah, thank you for...
Thank you, mate. I'm glad this is the first time I'm dipping my toe in.
Yeah, cool. Well, that's good. That's good. Well, you know the drill, right? How did you discover Bitcoin?
Well, you know how Bitcoin is like that website WTF happened in 1971. Well, because lots of things changed in 1971 that we can point back to. Well, I was actually born in 1971, and I reckon I've been a Bitcoiner since birth. I just didn't, it just hadn't come along yet. So it has answered a great deal of the things that I couldn't put together in the world. Like, I've always been, I never trust when someone tells me something's true. I have to always investigate it for myself. And anyway, and that was the start of, it remains my greatest decision. And it was the start of a journey of self-discovery and learning everything I possibly could about addiction, mental health, how the brain works. And then it was in that journey of listening to podcasts and walking in nature was basically what I did when I gave up drinking, because you get a whole lot of time back. And I just listened to podcasts 24/7, but it wasn't. So after I'd got about 3 years into sobriety, I had started studying addictions, counselling and mental health. But it was, it was starting to take a toll on me and the homeless people on the street, and everything was sort of affecting me. So I decided that wasn't the path for me. And I said to myself, God, I need something to mentally stimulate me. And boom, part of the podcasts I listened to a lot were London Real, but then... Yeah. Yeah, and just the stories of people overcoming every sort of, you know, problem in life, people that think outside the box, all that kind of thing. But I didn't actually hear about Bitcoin there, even though I know Antonopoulos and all that have been on there. But it was Pete Evans, the chef, or used to be the chef in Australia, he's got a podcast where he interviews all alternative thinkers and that kind of thing. And he had Alex Svetsky on, because Alex and him are mates. And it was he does a 12-part series there on Pete's podcast. And it was it was that that did it. And the thing is, the reason why, and it clicked instantly, and I know everyone else says it took multiple times, but it clicked instantly for me, because when I first left school in finished in 88 and went straight to work in a bank in 89.
Mm-hmm.
So interest rates were 17% then in Australia. But I would say to my boss then, okay, so when we, and I spent many years there, I did end up doing credit cards, personal loans, housing loans, lending side. So when we lend the money out and give it to someone, where is that money? And I asked it over and over and over again for many years, and no one could tell me.
Based.
And I just kept saying, but that doesn't make sense. It has to be somewhere. Where is it? Like our bank, do we get a certain amount we can borrow and lend and blah, blah, blah? And it was the idea that I was just debiting one account and crediting another account to give them the money. And they're going, everyone just said to me, they just pay it back in 30 years, the home loans, and we get interest as well. And I'm saying, yeah, but where is it now? Who's got that money now?
Yeah, have we done like a whip round and collected from our members to loan this money out? No
one could tell me ever that they were, you know, it's just creating it out of thin air, basically. I'm not sure what the exact year was when we didn't have to have, you know, fractional reserve banking. You don't even have to have anything.
Yeah.
It just blew my mind. But then I started to think, well, because everyone was sort of didn't know what I was talking about, I thought, well, maybe I'm the weird one. But to me it didn't make sense. And then the other thing was, when you do the old-fashioned telegraphic transfers and it'd go from Australia to America or whatever, and then say it didn't turn up, I'd then have to do a trace on that transfer. And it was very interesting to then see all the banks that went through and everyone taking their fees out and how long it took to get there or if it didn't arrive, kind of thing. So that was eye-opening too.
You were a Bitcoiner from the get-go.
Yeah, it just didn't. So the minute I... And then there's been many other things in my life, other jobs that I've done that have confirmed that things weren't right. And I didn't know that, you know, the term cognitive dissonance, but until much later. But that's what I've been seeing my whole life. Like, yes, you're telling me this is true, but what I'm seeing around me doesn't add up to that, and that some people seem to get it way, way easier than others. And it's not that they're not working. I mean, it's not the ones that are working hard. It's just some seem to get it without doing anything. Like, I just, yeah. And so I mean, early on I loved swimming, and I did a lot of swimming training, and I swam for many, many years up and down lanes. And it was to the silence. I liked that under the water. And then that's what alcohol then did as well. Helped me stop all the questions that weren't making sense. Just get on with it and, you know, don't worry, kind of thing. And so alcohol served a purpose for a while, but that's a slippery slope, as it's a addictive substance. But so once I and then the way I stopped drinking too was I did a course called Alcohol Lied to Me by a guy named Craig Beck, and it's about reprogramming your mind about all the things we think about alcohol in society and all the subconscious programming that we don't even see that's in society. And it just breaks down every one of those things you think is true. And it was also a hypnosis thing at night for a certain number of days. And I just thought after that, now I can't unsee the damage that alcohol does to society and the
Well, I mean, think about COVID, right? You couldn't do anything. You couldn't see your grandma in the hospital.
Yeah.
You couldn't, like, go over to your folks' place. You couldn't, you know, do all these ludicrous things. But go to the bottle shop, buy beer, buy wine, buy whatever the fuck. Like, fill your boots. Yeah. That's a, what do they call it? Crucial business or something.
It was a necessary service. And there is a number of reasons for that. The thing is, a huge amount of Australians who don't think they have a drinking problem would have found out very quickly if they stopped the alcohol. And you see that alcohol, there's two deadly things to detox from, and it's alcohol and opioids. And they would have, if they stopped alcohol, they wouldn't have been able to lock us all down because we would have rioted probably, I'd say. And the emergency departments could have been overrun with people going through DTs.
So it actually
was a necessary service, but it also locked people in their homes with their abusers, locked kids in their homes with their abusers, and everyone was bored out of their brain, so they drank more. So
what a perverse incentive.
Correct. The tricks that big alcohol use are like absolutely mind blowing. And once you see it, you can't unsee it. But anyway, it was after that, after I decided not to fully study alcohol addictions counseling and mental health, that I watched the podcast with Alex Vetsky, and I just went, holy hell, they can't print it out of thin air. Oh my God. And that, when I go down a rabbit hole, I go down a rabbit hole. And that was it for me. And then I just hoovered podcasts for the next 2 years nonstop.
Finally, someone was making sense to you. I mean, you've had, so many decades, really, with this question rattling around in your brain that no one can answer. And it's interesting to me that you mentioned how you were kind of using alcohol to quieten the mind a little bit, to shut it down, because it's the cognition is running wild, and everyone that you're turning to ask these very intuitive questions doesn't have an acceptable answer that's satisfactory, right? And you kind of, I guess it seems to me, and I'm not qualified at all, whatever, but like I see exactly why that would be attractive, because it's like, you're just this solo person in the world with all of these questions that aren't getting answered properly. And so then you kind of feel like a fish out of water, and then you just think, well, I need to be in the in group, you know, because here I am in the out group with all these wild.
Yeah, like who wants to give up alcohol in Australia? Like, you can't be serious.
And then, you can just rely on this thing to just numb your cognition effectively.
That's exactly what it does. And it works for a certain amount of time. But then it started taking more from my life than it was giving. And I'm very grateful to have had that relationship with alcohol, because it has brought me to where I am today, and it got me through some very – life has thrown me some very – some decent curveballs on the outside. So we renovated three houses while we lived in them. All on this idea that I thought I had to keep making more money, because the way the system is built today is to keep people on that mouse wheel,
totally
running full pelt, and two people working, and what it steals from families, the time and all that kind of stuff. So, once I heard that podcast, I then went forewarned. And it was all the touch points. Like, I think the next thing I read was check your financial privilege, the article by
Gladstein.
Yeah, Alex Gladstein. And that, you know how it sort of said about how it's cutting out Western Union. Like the people could in America from a third world country can send Bitcoin to their family and they get it on the other side easily. Mm-hmm. Whereas Western Union, they've got to travel, you know, they might have to travel 3 hours to get to the closest Western Union. They wait in the line where they could get robbed. They then get a certain percentage taken out both ends, the sender end and the receiver end, and then they risk getting robbed when they go out and then they've got to catch a three-hour bus home. It's like, yes. And also that, you know, women in domestic violence, sex workers, all those kind of things, how they quickly learn how to use it because it's a necessity, it becomes a necessity.
Oh, it's the best tool.
I don't think in Australia we haven't, you know, in the last, since the two world wars where our diggers went, we haven't known hardship in this country, and that's why the majority of people don't see it. They just think their house is worth a hell of a lot more. We've never had to flee a government that's turned against us until a couple of years ago, but then... But also we haven't seen our currency deflate away to nothing like other countries have. And I just think we are so, we've had it so good here that we don't see the need for it.
Well, that's part of the trope of the lucky country, that idea that, and that's like a derogatory, I think the author, I can't remember the name of him, but the fellow that wrote it called that book, The Lucky Country. I should probably look it up, but he called it The Lucky Country as like a derisory term, poking fun at Australians who just have no concept of how difficult life can actually be. And it's not like, you know, we all need to go out and seek that. And it's like they're doing a heck of a job right now with regards to making it a lot more difficult. And as you're saying, with respect to money and keeping up with the Joneses and going into so much debt and, you know, having to then pay that off, which means going away from your family in the day. And one thing, you know, that sort of grinds my gears a lot is in the most productive hours of the day, and I'm not talking early in the morning, I'm talking like 9 to 5, say, that's the best of you for that day. And then you're giving it to these people that you have nothing in common with other than the floor on the ground and maybe some halogen lights above you. And then when you get home, you're knackered, you're exhausted, you got to turn around and do it again. And they get the best of you in that scarce time throughout that 24-hour period. And the only reason that you're doing it is, I mean, when people are honest with themselves, I think is to go off and pay the bills, keep up.
And like you used to be able to one income you'd be able to have a home and maybe a holiday and a car and a couple of kids but then, you know, they incentivize women to go to the workforce because they wanted tax
them.
Which is I'm all for, you know, whoever in the family wants to work, but they incentivized. There was a method to their madness, and they incentivized women to go to work by telling them they were hardly done by, so that they could get the tax and take the kids off them earlier. And it's when you go through, it's all been quite calculated. But and then after I worked with Bank of Queensland, with the bank, I then spent 12 years in medical centre management, so saw the pharmaceutical industry side.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
And then did the last 6 years or so before COVID in government. So I saw the total, and I got asked to go there. But, yes, people think they know how government works, but it is when you put it all together, it's all siloed and everyone thinks they're doing a good job at this. Yeah, I couldn't stay and watch the money go down the drain any longer because it's quite gobsmacking. And yeah, so I left there and I've just been studying horticulture.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's the worst thing totally, you can do. Yeah, totally different change, midlife career change, but I couldn't be happier. And part of that is the Bitcoin, the time preference.
Yeah.
That was another big clicking point was De Gigi's two-part series with those blue-collar Bitcoin dudes. That his Bitcoin is time. That, yeah, blew me away. The digital scarcity. Just multiple touch points. Darren Feinstein, do you know who he is?
Yes, that rings a bell.
He's the dude that a lot of my jobs I've also done accounting, and so he's the guy that explained. And in accounting, you can go back and change anything. and I mean, I know these days probably auditors or probably computer programs will track who's changed what these days, but in the past, you could go back and change anything and before you lock a period or whatever. So when Darren Feinstein explained that Bitcoin is basically we've had double-sided accounting since clay tablets, basically, and this is the triple-sided accounting with the blockchain and the miners confirming in the middle, that blew me away. And then the energy part where they can take, the miners to stranded energy and use that. Like, there is so much. Yeah, it's quite mind-blowing really, isn't it?
Well, it touches everything. And it seems to me like you just have an innate curiosity that has gone for such a long time without being properly, satiated, satisfied. And then that it's cool that you listen or watch that podcast with Svetsky, because Svetsky back in the day for me particularly, like I sort of identified a little bit with it, just the way he was so fed up with the nonsense, but he had a way of articulating it in a way that kind of resonated a little bit with me. I mean, it reminded me of me if I was trying to explain Bitcoin to someone, because it'd just be like annoyed and irritated.
Well, I used to say to Brisket, I reckon I'm a female version of Alex Svetsky, because awesome. Yes, he did, and he did. That's probably why you had to get out of Amber and that. But the podcast he did, he explained it right from the very beginning, like what is money, right, seashells, salt, all that stuff, glass beads, right through to property rights to, when violence then comes into it to secure your property rights and people can pay for that violence. And then it was just, it just hit everything for me. And it's also, the time preference thing is huge in that what the current system steals from us, from the family unit, is mind-blowing. But it's also the way we treat each other. We've been programmed to compete against each other.
Yeah, transactional.
Yeah, and to all, but this,
what can I get out of this person?
Yeah, Bitcoin will change that in that it incentivizes us to treat each other better and I don't know, it's a whole different way of thinking about things. It is a paradigm shift entirely, and every single industry is corrupted by the fact that they can print money out of thin air. Governments are incredibly, like, they're all bankrupt. They're all, like, if they were a business, they'd be bankrupt.
Yeah.
I've been down the vaccination rabbit hole 10 years ago because I had a really bad reaction, incredibly bad reaction to one, and I went down that rabbit hole. And you just go, you've got to be kidding.
Mm.
And then I went down the cancer rabbit hole because I ended up having breast cancer or two lumps in my armpit.
Yeah,
wow. And went down the cancer rabbit hole after I'd been fully through treatment because of something the oncologist said to me. And I thought, like, and you think, I know people say we should be able to trust the regulators and that kind of thing. But when you dig into it, it is seriously like, and you go right down, follow the whole lot, follow the money kind of thing.
Mm.
It is seriously like the Wizard of Oz. You pull back the curtain and it's nothing there. It's a lot of different areas thinking they're all doing the right thing, but they don't really all link up. And
no, there's all these different brains and they're not communicating with one another.
Yeah.
There's no there. And what's, I mean, he's like everyone is kind of acting, you know, like they're doing the best job, but the miscommunication and then
and there's so many levels of silos put in between.
Yeah, and you wonder whether or not is that intentional or is that how centralized systems evolve over time?
Well, that's to make money. Like if you think about. Say if you think about the food one, if we put the person who's growing the food and the family that are eating it and it's there together, think about the system now. So you've got monocropping and industrial whatever, and you've got the food producers, then you've got the people that pack it, then the people that transport it, then the shopping centres, then Uber Eats, and then every single step in that process is depleting the food of nutrients and adding cost in the middle.
Yeah.
And Bitcoin does what? It takes all those central bankers and all the banks out of the middle.
And it incentivizes you to, it actually amplifies a lot of the stuff that you're sort of interested in prior, I suppose. I remember for a long while there, I got into hunting and
yes.
bow hunting in particular. And I started following this guy, Adam Greentree, and he is a fairly prominent backcountry bow hunter on Instagram. Yep. And, you know, the things that he was saying with regards to going out and on a hunt and then bringing that food back for his family, it passed through one pair of hands, his.
Yes, yes.
You know, and that makes intuitive sense. When you say yes. It like that, it's like, well, yeah, that makes sense. It's the same with milk and, you know, the whole real versus pasteurized, homogenized milk.
Yes.
You know, when you strip it all back and take away all of the nonsense, you realize this stuff is incredibly nutritious for you. And yeah. Healthful. And it's the same with money. Like when you were asking those questions back in the day at your bank, like, well, so where's the money now? Like we're going to loan it out to this person, but like, do we have the money in our vault? Have we got some sort of a collection plate going with our yeah. members, et cetera. And none of them can answer you. And then you stumble upon Austrian economics via Bitcoin, or if you're fortunate enough yeah. to stumble upon Austrian economics before Bitcoin. But the point is that Austrian economics makes intuitive sense, just like going out and hunting your own food makes intuitive sense. The difference is that, like, most people don't have time to go on a hunt, right, unless you make it a career.
And that's by design.
And that's the thing, right? Exactly, because it's just you've had all your time stolen because you're going to give everyone at work the best of you. So that you can, yeah, order Uber Eats at nighttime because you can't be bothered cooking because you're just knackered and you got all these other things you got to do, kids' homework and blah 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 blah, and it's just this giant fucking hamster wheel that everyone does want to get off but actually doesn't know how to get off. And that's the thing.
I want to have heaps of cheap crap on the back of slave labor off you know, third world countries, and then throw it all in the bin. It's like, that was another thing. I never liked lots of material stuff. I've always been wanting to, you know, I always go in the markets and selling stuff every 6 months or whatever, because I can't stand stuff.
Cupboard sales are awesome. You find a lot of cool shit.
Yes. Yeah.
And you don't need a brand new something, because it's probably shit anyway. It's probably going to fall apart. Like, go and buy old stuff. Fill your house with old stuff.
We throw everything in the bin these days. And
or on the front yard.
We've lost the art of all the handmade. We've lost the art of the handmade tools and, everything by hand. I don't know. I just think once it'll take a while for Bitcoin to, you know, for it'll be a bottom-up thing, as in it'll take a while for the incentives to stop destroying the economy and the environment. But when it does, I think it will all be able to go back to doing things we love and producing things of value for those around us and getting, you know, proof of work kind of thing. Like, I loved, my favourite show when I was a kid was Little House on the Prairie, and that's all I want now as an adult too.
Well, it reminds me of this book by David Graeber, Bullshit Jobs. I don't know if you've ever come across that, but it's basically, the whole book is about the existence of, like, or the proliferation of meaningless jobs and how that kind of equates to unseen social harm. I mean, it's basically Bastiat, you know, seen and unseen. But the idea that we've got all of these jobs which are full of people that just pretend to show up to work each and every day just to get a paycheck, just to piss it all up the wall on a Friday, or, you know,
and
spend it on the
mortgage.
That's
governments like that 10 times over.
Oh,
like,
without a doubt, they incentivize the hell out of those jobs. And, you know, it's a joke. Like, Bill down at the Bush Bash, you know, he's always railing against those prats down in Canberra and the barbecues that he attends, because they're all just jerk offs sitting in an office getting paid ludicrous amounts to do
producing nothing. Like, so when I was studying the addictions counseling and that, and I was also doing commercial office leasing for government, for Department of Housing. So you've got the homeless people on the street, and you've basically got the people that sign off on it or whatever, but there's like tens of thousands of people in the middle all sucking value out of the system. And it's like, I don't know, that was massive cognitive dissonance. Like, just, and then they change every 4 years. They'll change the names of the departments and move everything around, so you can't.
There's no long-term results. And again, that's kind of.
And there's no consequences for their actions, DJ. They get away with, like, they don't have to ever. I call it fuck up and go up in government. It's because if you basically stuff up, you can't get sacked. They have to find another role for you, and they move you sideways and create a little project for you. And there's thousands of people there that are milking the system and shouldn't be there, and it's our taxpayer dollars.
You reminded me of what I was thinking about earlier when you were talking about, like, how we've seen behind the curtain, there's no there. You know, when you're a kid and you kind of look up to, like, I guess, adults, your parents, your uncles, aunties, whatever, you think in your brain as a kid, whether you're 10 or 15 or hell, even 18, you're like, they're adults, man. They've got it together. They got their shit sorted. Like, when I get to that age, you know, I'm gonna be doing this and doing that and all the rest of it. And it's just a scam, because even with or without Bitcoin, you're still like this human being on the planet that's trying to evolve and move toward a higher state. I mean, ideally, that's what we all should be doing, but some people don't.
Yes.
But the point is that, like, they don't have it together because they're just fallible human beings. And if you apply that metaphor to government, like, it's 10x that. It's a whole bunch of people.
And they get to make rules over our lives.
But that's the thing, man, is that they have the power to write words on paper, which then tell you things that you ought to be doing. And it's like, fuck off. No one has their shit together.
Their personal preferences come into it.
Totally.
Whether that, like, I wouldn't go into the half the stuff I've seen, but you can't believe it. I used to say, surely you people want your government to do better than this, and they'd basically say, yes, Fiona, we know it's a waste of money, and yes, we know it doesn't even work, but just friggin' do it because I'm going to get my ass kicked or someone above me. Yeah, we've just got to do it.
You're one of the worst people to work in government because you got questioned.
Oh, yeah, I was just, every job I've been at, though, I'm, but that doesn't make sense. And they're going, oh, for God's sake, just do it. And I'm like, but no. Anyway, but
How has Bitcoin changed you?
Yeah, well, it's the time preference thing, and I realise how much of, you know, my drinking was caused because we've got to be on this mouse reel making money, be a good wife, be a good mother, look good, you know, work full time and do the house and everything. I realise how much that contributed to my drinking and to a lot of people's drinking. But it's also, so it's made me slow down, and I'm not going to rush anymore, and I don't want all to buy stuff at all. In fact, I want to sell everything to buy more Bitcoin. But it's also made me realize that I should always 100% trust my gut, because it's made me remember what it is to be human, because we've lost that, I think. We've gone so far down a path where incentives are so off the chart. As Jeff Booth says, that when money's abundant, everything else is scarce. And I reckon our values and everything is scarce, the way we treat each other. And this is why when we get together with Bitcoiners, we start to, you have a connection that's, there's just some sort of underlying values. I don't know. It's
weird to put your finger on it, because I was chatting with this in one of the groups that I'm in, and I heard this actually from Winekus from Bitcoin Kindergarten, but he said, you know, like, it's just cool to be such good friends with a whole bunch of people from all different walks of life just because we like the same money.
Yes,
But
it's so much more than that. Totally. It's so much more than that. And it's just beautiful. I wouldn't know where I'd be without discovering Bitcoin, because it gives you a reason to want it. It makes me want to improve every aspect of my life, so I'm around as long as I possibly can be to see it win.
Wow.
And if it doesn't, I'm happy to go down on the ship, because the alternative and what we're seeing play out around the world at the moment is beyond, you know, it's not really a ethics that I support, so I'm Bitcoin all the way.
Totally. Yeah, it gives you a real firm foundation to stand on and take a stand. Yeah. Like the whole Occupy Wall Street movement and any other protest against bad actors, be they from government or elsewhere, they're all meaningless and hollow effectively, because the underlying root cause is not being addressed. And it's hard to see it, as we all know, as Bitcoiners. But when you pass through that orange filter, or put that orange filter in the lens and see through that orange lens, everything is brought into sharp focus. And you mentioned that you're pivoting to horticulture. Yes. And the idea of working with plants, and, you know, how slow and steady
And yes,
and intentional.
Correct.
They grow. They grow at their own time, in their own pace, with intention.
Yes.
You know, up and down. And like that, that giving yourself the time to observe, whether it's plants or anything else, is so, so crucial.
And Mother Nature is so, she does not make mistakes, and she has so much to teach us, and we just need to, you know, stop being so arrogant and think humans that we know everything. But the whole system is set up to control, like we want to put everything into a box, and so we can predict what's going to happen in the future and then make money off it. Whereas Bitcoin and nature and working and living within our environment sustainably is all chaotic, and humans are chaotic, and that's the difference between the Keynesian and the Austrian economics, is that humans can change their mind. Humans aren't going to necessarily act exactly the way a graph or a, you know, some scientist says. But if you put us in a box and say you've got this disease or you've got that disease or you've got whatever, or humans are going to do this, then they can predict and control and make money off it. So part of Bitcoin too, I think a lot of us humans are wanting to try and control it, whereas we just need to sit back and let it do its thing, and it will overcome every challenge that's thrown in its face, I believe, and the simpler the better, because we overcomplicate everything.
You reminded me of this idea of control and putting things in boxes. There's a part in a book called Leela or Lila.
Yes.
I prefer Leela. I think it's pronounced Lila, but anyway, by Robert Persig. I think I've mentioned it on the pod a couple of times.
Yeah.
But there's a part in there when he talks about the discovery of platypus. And yes. when scientists, early zoologists first found this thing, they classified mammals as like these things that suckle their young, and reptiles that lay eggs, right? Yeah. These are the two boxes. These are the two categories. And then this platypus comes along, and it's got a duck bill, and it lays eggs, like a reptile. And then they get hatched and they suckle their young just like a mammal. And the discovery, you know, what does he say? The discovery created quite a sensation. You know, it was this marvel of nature. And they couldn't understand how this paradox existed in nature. And the thing is, like, platypus are ancient creatures. They've been doing this stuff for millions of years before this idea of zoology came on board. And what he says, what he points out in this book is, I'll read it here. Zoologists, to cover up their problem, had to invent a patch. They created a new order, Monotremata. That includes the platypus, the spiny anteater, and that's it. And then he says, this is like a nation consisting of two people. This idea, like, it doesn't fit within our current models. It completely breaks them. All our models are destroyed. let's just create a whole new box, and we'll chuck two species in there relative to everything else.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the height of arrogance, effectively.
It is, And there's, it's the same in the plant world, that they don't believe, you know, science doesn't say, and it's dated back centuries, that science doesn't believe plants have not an intelligence, but that they don't have an intelligence. But when you look at plants and you watch what they do, and like the mycelium, I mean, that was another touch point, was Brandon Quidham's The Mycelium of Money, because mycelium is like, I'm obsessed with it. So when I saw that that video equating it to money the same way, and the way the nodes work. And when China, you know, banned the mining, it was just like chopping off one part of the mycelium network and it just regrows elsewhere. And, you know, the difficulty adjustment is like, that is just mind-blowing. I reckon it's like human homeostasis, always bringing us back into equilibrium kind of thing.
Alignment.
Like it's just, it's mind-blowing how good this is, yeah. But, yeah, time will tell, won't it?
It will, and the beautiful thing is to give ourselves enough time. And, I mean, what's interesting is the longer you hold or hodl onto Bitcoin, the obviously you're saving, you know, into purchasing power.
Yes.
Your purchasing power is going up. And then you can afford to divert some energy elsewhere. So you can even go on those walks without feeling guilty. I don't know about you, but there's been times in my life when maybe you've taken a day off and you just want to be, you know, on a walk or not doing the stuff that you ordinarily would be doing that day. But there's
human beings, not human doings.
Right. But there's this guilt trip thing, yeah, playing out in the back of your mind, like, well, you know, you've got to be productive. You should be doing this and the other. And we have this huge culture, like online and everything, and Instagram and TikTok and shit like that, where everyone's out there grinding, man. And it's just like, no, just like slow down.
The thing is with that, it's that algorithms, all the algorithms then get you to, say you're selling art online or whatever, all the algorithms then get you to do this and you'll get more viewers, and do that and you'll get more sales. And in the end, you go, you don't even like what you're producing because you've done it to suit algorithms and fast-paced everything.
Yeah.
Sell, 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 buy, 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 consume, consume, consume.
Yeah, it's just pervasive, and what they co-opt it, dilute it, it just gets hollowed out, and that thing that you initially discovered and were working on to discuss, to talk about, whatever it is, becomes a chore, basically.
Yes, yes.
You know? And you have to, maintain.
Guilt thing.
Maintenance is so boring.
Yeah. The guilt thing, when you tell people you're slowing down and not going to work full time and you're not going to be, you know, or even parents that want to stay home and look after their kids, what do you mean you're not going back to work? Society, we glorify being busy, 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 busy. But, yeah, Bitcoin changes that, and it's a beautiful thing, and what a privilege too. I feel so privileged that I understood it fairly quickly. And yeah, what a time to be alive. I think we're living through, we will look back on this time as revolutionary, I think, now in the next 10 years.
Yeah, I agree. Although I like to use the word evolutionary, I like to drop the R, because if it's revolutionary, we're just going to cycle back to the same old shit before. Hopefully we can, like, you know, evolve these ideas similar to what Bill Hicks was
talking
about.
Well, hopefully. And if human greed can't corrupt the supply of the money, then we shouldn't. Like, yeah, we should evolve to a better way of being.
I was going to say, it's almost before it's a rare bird that can hear a conversation about Bitcoin and have it click instantly. Some people say that, and they and you kind of like, yeah, I don't really believe you, having this conversation, like, you've done the proof of work prior.
Yes,
and this
was
like the final piece of the puzzle. I'm just sort of imagining that you watching or listening to this Fetsky podcast, and these pieces of the puzzle are starting to click into place, and you're all of a sudden getting a full picture. And some people that takes years to do, but you're just like, oh, this is all the shit that I was thinking about. Now it's all fitting into place. Like, it's like the keystone of this thing.
Because if money is not anchored to anything, like, you know, if it's just printed out of thin air, it's like, yeah, I don't know. All value is lost.
It's bullshit. Like,
yeah.
I was working today, and I'm just like, I actually have to stop putting it out of my brain some days when I'm just like, here I am doing what I'm doing, and they're just printing this stuff for free. Like, you know, that idea of just busting a gut, and yeah, they just press control P, add a couple more zeros to the balance sheet.
Yes.
To get them out of a pickle, whatever the excuse is, I don't know. But like,
No, I think it'll take a while, but I think there's big reckonings coming too. I think people are really waking up. Like the school system, the education system. Who says it's true that if you don't go to school, you don't get a job? Like all the people, you know, a lot of the podcasts I listen to, when you people overcoming huge obstacles in their life, and you know, they often say, "Oh, my grade three teacher told me I'd end up in jail and I'd amount to nothing." So I decided I'm going to prove her wrong, kind of thing. And it, you don't have to go to, I don't believe, indoctrinated school to. I'm down the Steiner rabbit hole now as well, because my dad's been gone 22 years, but he would have definitely been a Bitcoiner, definitely.
Nice.
And so he read Steiner and a lot of Isaac Asimov and all that stuff back then, and yes, everything he used to say was, I'd say, "Oh, Dad, you're a weirdo," but now he wasn't. He wasn't crazy. He was just early on lots of things. So,
what a legend! I mean, reading Asimov, reading Steiner, it's tough going. I mean, it's hard to pass the filter of that stuff. I've been, you know, reading a lot of Steiner as much as I can lately, and it's freaking difficult. But what's amazing is that he touches on so many subjects.
Yes, yeah. Like even, I did, before I did the horticulture, I did a permaculture course, and that he comes up a lot there in, you know, agriculture, permaculture. You know, he's herbalism, because, you know, he said for every human ailment, there is a plant on earth that will cure you. And I'm definitely down that, rabbit hole. And I couldn't find his quote, but one about working with your hands and the way it makes the mind work too.
Yep. I was reading a book called, I think it's Mastery by Robert Greene. He was talking about Einstein mentioning a quote about working with your hands, because he liked to play the violin, Einstein.
Yes.
And it helped him sort of articulate his thoughts a bit more utilizing his hands. And then Steiner talks a lot about that, because it's that heart, head, hands connection.
Correct. And I learned a lot about that in when you study mental health and addictions. And you know how they say, if you want to have a tough conversation with your kid, have them, you know, have it in the car, because you're not face to face. But also people sitting around in groups working with their hands, it is very good for the soul. And people out in the garden digging together and planting plants, it is so healing for mental health. And because it just, and I found the way I learn the best is walking in nature and listening to podcasts. There's something about the walking and the listening to an audio and two people discussing a topic helps me, you know, when they break it down. And that's what, during COVID, I found the hardest is, it was just blanket silence. So anyone who raised a question, it was blanket silence, as in you aren't allowed to ask that question. Whereas, I've always learned by discussing.
Yeah, conversation.
Yeah, so conversation, yes, exactly. And I imagine, and in the beginning when I didn't have anyone to discuss Bitcoin with, that's why I went looking for the, you know, the Brisbane meetup, the Gold Coast meetup, the Bush Bashes, the because I needed to find other people to talk to about it.
And then isn't it like a revelation when you meet them and you don't know them from a bar of soap and you couldn't pick them out in a lineup because not all Bitcoiners look the same. And then you start chatting and it's like an instant connection. It's the strangest thing. I wonder sometimes whether or not it's just some sort of global
shed or something. It's still in human nature when you get groups together that have a common interest. Like you can get people together, groups together that have lost children or victims of crime or, addiction or they've all sorts of hobbies and that kind of thing. You bring people together because they've got a common interest. But this is another level up, I think, too. I don't know. It takes so much effort to understand it fully, doesn't it? Or none of us even understand it fully, and I think we'll be finding out things for years. But it takes such a level, such a dedication that it's sort of you're willing to listen to that person. And we don't all agree on the same things, and we all come from different walks of life, but that's what's so bloody interesting.
Oh, yes.
That's what sets my brain on fire. And I've always said there's no small talk in Bitcoin. You just get straight into the stuff. No house or weather and bullshit. It's straight into the meaning of life and the philosophical ones and all that. I just love it.
It's just awesome. Yeah. It really is. And take what works, leave what doesn't. You know, go and view the talk that interests you. Don't view it, whatever. Yeah. No one gives a shit. Like, just be and contribute some value as required. It's as simple as that, really.
Correct. Ridiculous. And for the first time in history, you can fly out of the country with 12 words in your head and have everything you own.
It's like, wild.
It is wild, isn't it? It's like it is a paradigm shift that people are not going to know what hit them. I don't think, but.
The digital scarcity, I mean, you mentioned like the proof of work that we've all sort of done to try and understand Bitcoin, to try and comprehend it. I've recently orange pilled an old friend of mine, and they've still got a few. I'm sort of helping them to get some coins off an exchange and all that sort of stuff. And they were messaging me the other day and they're like, oh, I can't send these, list of shit coins, whatever they were, onto the device. It won't receive them. And I was like, well, yeah, that's because it's a Bitcoin only device. And I was like, so you still got them? Well, I think you should probably, sell them and buy more Bitcoin with them. But I mean, you don't have to listen to me. That's just what I would do. And this is early in their journey. And so, you know, they're still fully not grokking this thing, but they were basically like, well, yes, yeah, I hear you, but I think they've got a bit of play in them yet. And, I'll let them on the exchange. So, you know, like they might rip and you might be able to sell more, but like, so will Bitcoin. And then you'll have less Bitcoin. You have to learn, like, that's it. You just got to touch the stove. And if you don't, willing to,
it's a journey and everyone, I find it very similar to the journey of sobriety in that there's nothing anyone else can tell you about it. You have to do the work yourself. And if you don't want to do it, it's the same as there's no point trying to get anyone sober if they don't want to do it themselves. And it holds a mirror up to you. Bitcoin does the same way as sobriety does. And I find many similarities, but and you can tell if someone says something about Bitcoin I don't mean that they're only so far down the rabbit hole, but if they say something, or if we hear on the news or whatever, politicians and all that saying it, we know they are lying. We know they don't know what they're talking about. And it's
It's the confidence It's the confidence, though, with which they talk about it. Like the confidence drives me up the wall. It's like,
yes.
I don't care if you know about it, don't know about it, whatever. But particularly if you don't know about something, don't stand on TV or radio, whatever mass media you want to use, and talk about this subject with such confidence. Like, I just can't abide that. It's just so inauthentic.
And but that's even the people regulating it. They don't understand it. The regulators in government don't understand it.
And so what? We're supposed to abide by these prats that have no clue how this thing works and yet can talk a big game. It's just like, fuck off.
Yeah.
Seriously.
It's like Charlie Munger said.
It's rat poison.
It's like dog shit squared and rat poison. But then he did say, but I find it curious that in the last drawdown, nearly 80% of people held. And I thought, that should have told you, mate. That should have told you the conviction of these people, because once they understand where we just buy more when it's going down, and that conceited arrogance,
We get stressed when, I mean, I don't know about you, but I start feeling a pang of anxiety. When I saw it recently go down below 1,000 sats per dollar.
Yeah.
I was like, oh man, it's not many sats.
No. And it's not comfortable. Like I went in at the fairly high mark. I think it was around the 68 and then bought all the way up and then all the way back down. It's not comfortable when you're underwater, but just the conviction, my conviction never wavered one bit. It's
beautiful.
And it is difficult, though, when every person around you thinks you're crazy. But there's just something in me. Like, I've given up alcohol. I didn't get the jabs, and I'm a Bitcoiner and couldn't be happier.
Yeah, found your tribe.
And yeah, couldn't be happier.
Well, so. I'm mindful of the time, and what's cool about this conversation is that I've barely gotten to any of the spinal questions that I sort of used to rail, to sort of keep this conversation on the rail, which is, that's a sign of a good conversation. So I'm going to skip to the end, and what's interesting is actually we've probably answered most of those questions anyway, just accidentally we've sort of stumbled upon them, and it's been an outgrowth. That's fun. This is a question I do enjoy asking. What does Bitcoin mean to you?
It means the first time in human history that we've had a money that can't be corrupted by human greed, and it will level the playing field. As in, it'll give people an equal opportunity. And if they want to achieve, they can achieve. And if they want to sit on their backside, they can sit on their backside and get the rewards, the no rewards. It's not about having, it's about everyone having a level playing field to start from, because it's so, when you read The Creature from Jekyll Island and you go down all these rabbit holes, there's not an even playing field.
No. No, it's a scam. I had this conversation with Daniel Prince, very early on in the recording of these episodes, and I said that everything's a scam. They're like everything. And I sort of cringe when I hear that back sometimes, and it's like, it's a bit of hyperbole.
Yeah.
But it's true. Like, everything that runs on fiat is just a downright scam. Everything.
Yeah. And you look at the way the third world countries are treated. They've got to pay everything in US dollars. They have to hand over all their resources. They're just never going to get out of that debt. So if Bukele can, like, what he is trying to achieve is, you know, really, I hope he does succeed, because, like he said, he's been criticised and criticised because of all the loss they'll take financially to start with, because of locking up all the criminals, because of all the businesses that benefit off the criminal dollars. Versus now he's saying, yeah, but what about all the kids that were too scared to go to school, or were, they make more money by going into crime, or they've seen so you've got to take the hit first. And that's what, you know, like our politicians, none of them want to take a hit because they just want to get in for the next 4 years.
Totally. So no one wants to bit the wheel when it all turns to shit, you know, and so they're incentivized to not do it. And that's.
Yes. We've put comforts in everything we do in life now, and everything makes us weaker, and everything makes us prone to being it's not decentralized, it's under control by centralized systems, and yeah, we need to turn that around pretty quick, I think.
It's going to take a lot of work. It's going to take a lot of intention and will. And
yes, but with Bitcoin, we have a chance, and that's all we need. And I believe it's come for a reason. And if it didn't come through Satoshi, it would have come through someone else, because it is time for humanity to have a bit of a reckoning, I think. And yeah.
And you're doing exactly what's required, which is yourself. You're doing it with yourself.
Yep.
You're going through doing the proof of work. That pivot to horticulture or anything, really.
Yeah.
You know, that's daunting. You know, particularly.
But I absolutely love it. But it was scary to think I'd stay in government and be there in 10 years' time. The thought of that was scarier than leaving. And I had to resign 3 times because they can't believe you'd possibly resign from a government job. But, yeah, best decision. Giving up drinking started all this journey. And, yeah, I couldn't be happier.
How good. Fee, thank you so much for spending some scarce time, Finite Energy, telling us the tale of how you discovered Bitcoin.
Thank you for having me. Absolutely lovely. It's an honor to walk this path with all of you.